Welcome back, everybody. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is the Skulls Cast, episode 60, wherein Medibot and myself describe our experiences at a convention that we recently went to.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, we have listener questions.
Yes, yeah, that other thing.
Yes, that the thing that thing. We should do as much as possible of, because people ask us these questions
all
nicely,
right.
And we should... We
Sounds
should answer
good.
Them. So, our first question comes from Zorak, who asks a twofold question. One, who is your favorite Planeswalker flavor-wise? And two, who is your favorite Planeswalker mechanics-wise? That's kind of rough, because I think all the Planeswalkers are idiots, as I've described before.
Well, except, didn't we, like...
We ended up acknowledging that Sorin is
not is probably not, like, overtly stupid.
Yeah.
Isn't, like, Koth and maybe Venser, are they sort of okay? Sort of in the clear?
Koth is, for number two, Koth is definitely my favorite. He's my favorite Planeswalker mechanics-wise because he is the Mountain Man.
He
Mountain.
They might as well have made him cost Quad Red. Would have been just the same. Just to hammer that point home, Play Mountains.
Also, he is named Vom Hammer Clan.
Yeah, Koth Vom Hammer Clan.
Koth Vom Hammer Clan. So he's definitely the... He's the winner mechanics-wise, hands down. I don't think any of the Planeswalker mechanics...
I'm trying to just sort of go through my list. I mean,
Well, if we're just talking about, like, what they look like, then Tybalt actually wins it for me.
Tybalt's got pretty massive
He's too freaking awesome, you know? He's like, whoa...
He shows up.
Swank demon guy.
Swank demon guy just emerges out of, like, a volcano hell pit, and he's like, hey, idiot fuckers. He doesn't care what you want. He's gonna do some spells. He's gonna do some fucking magic.
Yeah, and if only he had had, like, any kind of good
If only they had given him abilities that were worth a damn.
But I wanna answer the first part of this honest to the point of mechanical flavor.
Okay.
You know, like, that. You know, you can look at the card and you know what he is doing. The same way that we look at Jace and we have no fucking idea what he is doing.
Some idiot.
So, man, I always want to... Maybe I should pull open a list of Planeswalkers here.
Like, we got, like, three versions of Lily.
Yeah.
Two versions of Chandra.
Oh, and, like, Swamp Lily should definitely have been Koth. Like a corrupted Koth instead of Liliana, and he could have been the Swamp Man instead of the Mountain Man.
The Swamp Man.
I would, yes.
You get the Swamp Lady instead.
I mean, I'm not opposed to there being a Swamp Lady, it's just... It doesn't make sense for that to be Liliana, given what she was before, which was, you know... Resurrecto Mage and Punishment Mage. And now she's Swamp Lady, and it's just... It's out of nowhere.
They don't want to invent another black mana planeswalker.
Aside from Sorin? Or did they just not want to bring Koth back?
Because he makes even less sense as a swamp man, somehow.
Yes. Let's see. Who actually has any kind of mechanical interest for flavor? You know what? Poof. Garruk Relentless. There we go. I don't think it's going to be all that close.
Yeah, I like Big Garruk.
Big Daddy Garruk?
Yeah.
This is like... Well, he's too functional, you know?
Yeah, kind of.
Because, draw cards equal to the greatest power. What does that even mean? Like, you could just get this buff creature, and then you look at it and you're like, yeah, it's a buff-ass creature. I'm smarter now.
You're not smarter. What? You have more ideas about creatures. You have creature ideas.
But yeah, no, I mean, the way that Garruk Relentless works, the way he, like, fights a guy or makes a wolf, and then he transforms, and he's all different, and he can transform whether or not he ever activate his abilities, and then he's oozing flavor. Mm. I like that. So, yeah, Garruk... Relentless, Garruk the Veil Cursed for flavor, and Koth Vom Hammer Clan for mechanical fun. particularly Koth's minus two. I end up doing sneaky things with that a lot. What a bunch of idiots. So many Jaces. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, got Jaces wild, Kaz.
Oh, there are four of them, so you can have...
Wait, seriously?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. No, there's like Jace Classic, Diet Jace, yeah. Who's busted.
Right.
Crystal Jace, who costs five.
Right. And now the new Jace from Ravnica.
Oh, right. There was like a freaking
there's
new
a new
Jace
yeah.
from Ravnica.
That's the new Jace.
Has there like ever been, like, what are the walkers? I guess Tamiyo exists.
And yeah, we have instantly forgettable. Tezzeret the Spear. She's really powerful, though.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, you think of Blue Walkers, you think of Jace, because there's freaking four of him, and he won't shut his trap.
Four of them. And Jace the Mind Sculptor has ruined us forever on Planeswalkers in general.
Yeah, ruined. Terrible. House Arrest for the Jace.
Not terribly happy about the new Gideon Jura, but we'll get to him eventually.
Wacky. The red green one looks okay though.
I have different reservations about him having nothing to do with his mechanics.
Mm.
So we'll get to all
that.
But
so
thank
you
for your question.
Hope that answers your question, Zorak.
Yeah. Okay, so next up, we have a question from listener Alan Turing Supercar. On things like Unity or Construct 2 that seem to exist to make it easy for anyone to make games, do you think it's good for the medium as a whole? I think I might have mistakenly deleted part of this question. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, better tools are good for the medium as a whole. Just sort of blanket.
Well, the thing is that we often talk about, like, making games, so I don't want to shortchange Alan Turing Supercar on this.
Right.
I mean, I've never used either, but...
Like, I tried to use Unity and got sort of destroyed by a bad tutorial, but lots of other people have put Unity to good effect to make
games. I think I can dispel all doubt about our answer to the question with the following supposition. Suppose, Bettybot. I can hear you supposing.
Yeah.
Suppose that the opposite is true, that we don't have things to make it easy for anyone to make games. That the tools of Unity or Construct 2 either don't exist or are so technically hard to develop for or hard to get into that only the like super masters of coding are allowed to make games just on a from not like from a legalistic perspective but from a technical perspective we only get this one category of human who's allowed to make games because the tools are so sophisticated.
Yes.
That's clearly awful,
also unsustainable, because programmers are by their nature lazy, who will seek to invent better tools to make future work easier.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we enter the world where these tools don't exist but programmers do, someone will make them, because it makes sense to make them and they fulfill a niche. And I only hope that either you and I, Medibot, or other people can work with them to good effect. Mm-hmm. I have a great many ideas in my head, and they often just have to set them down on paper.
Mm.
I have a big backlog of that.
Yeah, I'm working
grumper.
On, like, I got sort of distracted by a little Twine event going on, but then I'm going to get back to work on Just Ball for Fuckers. As making games.
Yeah. I mean, if I show you what I've done in that, I think you'll see what I mean.
Mm.
And you'll probably know what needs to be done to fix it, but
There's
very little that I think it needs. Maybe like some crappy soundtrack. We'll just sit there and like a cappella a soundtrack of some kind.
Sounds good. Indie.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, we like that things like Unity and Construct 2 exist and that they're easy to use, and we want more things to make it possible for even more people to make games.
Yes.
That would be really good. If everyone could sit down and make games the way anyone can, like, open up GarageBand and make crappy music, I think that would be great.
Yeah.
And speaking of crappy games and music, I think that segues nicely into tonight's discussion.
Oh, no.
Yeah!
All right.
So, both MediBot and myself went to MAGFest.
MAGFest.
How should we even start? I mean, it's so... Should we go, like, by order of the days that we spent there?
I want to say chronologically will give us the only framework I can think of.
Well, I mean, you can go by chronology or by just events.
Okay.
So we take
the most important event first, which is to say, we...
Well, the Yoshi's Cookie Tournament.
Yeah, the Yoshi's
Clearly.
Cookie Tournament. The GYCL ran a tournament there, the Eastern Conference Winter 2013 Open Championship Series. It was organized by myself, MDB Recoil, and we had invited special guest commentator HDDB Dog's Breakfast.
That would be me.
To provide commentary and
to cater the event.
And to cater the, holy crap, oh my god, this was so good. There were cookies, and we had like 16 people sign up to play Yoko, and it was hype, and it took 2.5 hours, and I regret nothing except maybe not starting with 2 setups going.
Yeah, I mean, we learned a lot, and
yes,
we definitely will do this sometime again.
Oh, yes.
Because it was that freaking awesome.
It just feels good.
We learned a lot, too. We can take away from our experiences. A number of things. One, if we're going to run it again, we should have 2 stations going.
Yes.
So that it doesn't take as long and takes perhaps half the time.
I would estimate half the time.
Also, we should get more help. Between you and me, we were just like barely managing everything.
Yes.
At any given time. And there were times when I felt like I just needed another person there to go run and do some shit. And it's 1,000 little things that you don't even realize are going to happen. You can't plan for. So we need a staff, is I guess what I'm saying.
GYCL event staff.
Yeah. GYCL event staff. That would be pretty good. And as far as commentary goes, it would be a lot easier if we had 2 people commentating on each screen so that I could only pay attention to 1 screen and the other commentator could pay attention to the other.
Yeah, definitely a dedicated
really
commentary team for each station.
I mean, even if there's not... Because, you know, there's not always something happening, but there's always something to talk about. And I just felt like I couldn't keep up with everything that was happening.
Mm.
I mean, that a little bit of that is just practice at commentating anything and sounding like an idiot. But I think it would be a lot better if we had more people. We need to expand the global Yoshi's Cookie League.
We need to expand the staff. We need to build hype. We need to get more players in the GYCL.
Yes. You know what was beautiful about that? An hour before the event when we're, like, standing outside with these bobo-ass
flyers. Yeah, so we stole this, like, little pad of hotel stationery from our hotel room. And we just wrote on them, just, you know, in pen or whatever, you know, Yoshi's Cookie Tournament, 1 p.m., you know, whatever. A few little details on there. And then we stand at the bottom of the escalators where the entrance to the whole, the game area, the vault, as it was called.
Yeah, they called it the vault. It's their gigantic warehouse area divided into 3 sections.
Yeah, it's game room plus dealer hall. And we were just shouting, telling people about esports, to support esports.
Yeah. Do you like tournaments? Do you like cookies? Then come support esports by participating in the Yoshi's Cookie Tournament at 1 p.m.
That is definitely
like
that is definitely the situation where I have perhaps talked to the most strangers in the shortest amount of time.
Oh, that was beautiful. Because
that's something I'm terrified of doing, but with the help of the GYCL, I overcame that.
Well, I had a blast doing that because I love
Accosting
Strangers.
No, it started feeling really good.
You know what it felt like? It felt like when we used to do Poetry Pirates.
Yeah! Oh, yeah.
Because that was a very similar thing. We would go and yell at strangers in a semi-structured way.
Like, possibly authorized? That's not really important.
Well,
strictly speaking, no one else has approved it.
No. As far as possibly authorized goes, the if we do this again, I want to coordinate more with whoever's running the con or whatever, MAGFest.
Yeah, if we do it at a con.
And say, yo, I bake cookies for this event, so I hope you guys are cool with that. And because I kind of snuck them in.
Yeah, we did. We snuck them in. Pretty well,
and,
though.
Yeah, you know, label it equipment.
Yeah, it is.
Be like, oh yeah, this is totally equipment for our.
We definitely did not, you know.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, if next time I bake the cookies and they go in a place where people are expecting food or can get it, then it's a more fair test of whether they're good or not.
Because
if I just throw them into a place where people are not allowed to have any food and it's the only food around, that's cheating. Granted, I do know how my cookies go and what they taste like. So.
The checkerboard cookies were extremely good.
You like the chocolate, huh?
Yeah. Mm. It was quite good.
Those were the only ones that had chocolate. I regret that I put cherry sours in the one, because that cookie type should have been green for the Super Nintendo version.
GYCL moved to the Super Nintendo version after a panel review found that the character selection expanded strategic depth.
Man.
We ran a Yoshi's Cookie tournament.
You and I did.
We did that.
We did that.
It was good.
So yeah, that
I
was
didn't
Friday.
Plan it.
That was, neither did I. I mean, I thought that would.
I thought it would be a bit.
It would corrupt the system.
I played some casuals after though, felt good.
Yeah. I don't. We might have to get more serious about like the game itself too.
I mean, yeah. Like if this takes off, I'm gonna have to actually like practice a little.
Well, no. I mean, like figure out what actual characters' strengths and weaknesses mean. Because
I sort of know that.
Hmm?
I sort of know that.
Well, right, but you don't know it in the kind of rigorous sense that we might need.
Well, it's like.
No, that's okay.
That's a different
topic.
We don't have to
go into describing the.
Okay, so that was like basically the high point of the whole event was us running Yoshi's Cookie.
Yeah, everything was sort of framed around that.
Yeah, because that was like, you know, that had been scheduled. It was on the official, you know, event schedule was this Yoshi's Cookie tournament, and it was pretty cool when they published the schedule, and I'm like, oh wait, right, that's me on the schedule.
Yeah.
Felt kind of weird, but good. Speaking of weird, and things that feel weird on the schedule, how about that one Castlevania panel?
Alright, so the night before the Yoshi's Cookie tournament, I decided, you know what, I want to go to a panel.
Panel?
Because people go to panels, right? Now, if I had been left to my own devices, had no friends there, and just sort of went to the con for whatever reason, I would probably have ended up doing the challenge stations and the free play arcade machines for the entire weekend.
And that's not a bad plan, honestly.
That's kind of my default mode. Well, it's like, it's too much. That's a good plan for a day or so, but for like 4 days, that's crazy. Now, because I knew this was my default mode, I wanted to shake that up a little bit. I wanted to experience more. I wanted to get the full convention experience. I very rarely go to these, you know? So I say, all right, Castlevania panel. Now, up to that point, Medibot, you and some of the others, Discord and Discord's brother, had described to me the various contents of panels that you had been to, and I got the feeling that all the panels were some kind of, like, personality or expert or former, like, composer for the games or producers of games and that kind of stuff, that they're all, like, real people who have done cool things.
Yeah.
And I just sort of had that mistaken idea of what a panel is in my head
when
I decided to go to this. Okay, so we get to the Castlevania panel thing, and I'm like, oh, this is like a tech who's setting up for whoever's going to be here. Somebody who like worked on Castlevania 2 or something. No. There's just one guy there, and he's up front with his like crappy Mac computer blasting weird iTunes stuff. And he just starts talking kind of quietly into his mic, which cuts in and out. And he starts talking about Castlevania, and I realize, oh, wait, this is all there is.
Mm.
Oh.
Mm.
But I took notes. No, I took notes on this.
Yeah.
So let me see if I can fetch me down my notes.
Scathing review of this panel.
I can attach botched note-taking effort to the list here. So I'm going to...
Goodness.
This is like half of a sheet that I have ripped in half. It's kind of... All right, so here I'm going to just read my notes, I think, and see how that goes. So, how I learned to love Simon's Quest, Midnight Castlevania. Let's see. Quote, best nerdcore band there is, he said about somebody, but I just felt like writing that down because it's amazing.
It's quite powerful.
Castlevania Adventure is rad. Soundtrack, it's very good. Battle of the Holy is apparently like the best soundtrack piece from that. Let's see. Belmont's Revenge has the hardest Dracula, so he says. Which, I mean, I kind of have to check on that myself, because if it beats out Dracula X for hardest Dracula, I'll be surprised. Then again, you have things in Dracula X, so maybe that's correct. Okay, I reviewed every single one. Every game was hard. Business version. What do I do? Business version. Talk about Redoct. Oh, Redacted.
Yeah.
Right. Castlevania 2 Redacted, or whatever it is that, like, air quotes, fixes Castlevania 2 and shit. Then I write, who the fuck is this guy?
We still don't know.
Quote, infamous. He kept saying infamous.
Yes.
This is extremely terrible. Drunk hecklers. The mic cuts out. Dude mutters and plays loud audio. OC Remix is here. Over 100 remixed versions. More drunk hecklers. Who the fuck are you? Not much that lends itself to a visual medium. First game was just fucking around. They've always been copying other games, quote. They've always been derivative. Lord of Shadow just slapped an IP on for Castlevania. No Metroid game sells well in Japan, so he says. There's no structure to this. The devs for C2 Deception was built in. So they said. I don't know where he got that quote, but... He said that the developers thought that lying would be correct.
Yeah. Just lie to the player to mess them up.
Dude had Graveyard Duck. Again, music. That's what it was. Let's see. Can't read my own writing. Oh, okay, so... Kneel with a red crystal at Deborah Cliff to summon the wind. That was an actual like kanji Japanese quote, and he goes over how the game is basically playable and intelligent in Japanese, but the like English translation fucks it up. Let's talk about them pseudo-intellectual forums, like now. Yeah, establishing things. V6 sound chip for Castlevania 3, Alucard thrown in to overcome difficulty, which is what he stated, but I didn't believe, because you have to go out of your way to get Alucard in the first place, and he's hard to use and weak. and it's a challenge. But he apparently hadn't played Castlevania 3. Let's see. Game covers are generic nowadays, he says. And my argument with Castlevania 3, this is a little kid who never stopped. Unfair difficulty, question mark? C4 was supposed to be a remake of C1, sure. Slowly Shift in C4 was one of the last games before they left to become Treasure. Oh, okay. So yeah, the team who made Castlevania 4 or whatever left and made Treasure, and then Castlevania changed. Okay. Then we talked about canon and retconning in Curse of Darkness, and he sidetracked me personally because I, at this point, started talking to him a lot about Curse of Darkness because I like that game.
Yeah,
I know it.
That's your bag.
And I acknowledge its flaws, which are many, and big enough that I can't, in honesty, call it a good game, but it is a fun one, and I have a lot of fun with it. Let's see, C3 gets referred to more than the others, therefore, it is the best. That was the closest thing he did to, like, having a point with this whole thing.
He was just sort of, like, rambling and going through the timeline, sort of, but also
and he
not.
Says vampires have too many powers, and Dracula is a force of chaos, blurg. The best depiction of Dracula is in Castlevania Judgment.
Mm-hmm. He got that steampunk vest on.
Lament of Innocence is too interesting. I don't know why he said that. Anyway, Death acts like a Ronin and is sneaky in Curse of Darkness.
He throws out all these little bits. He throws out bits. And
cynical
then
Easter eggs.
Does not substantiate.
It's too easy. Was a tired retread. And so on. Ugh, I can't even. Anyway, that's the notes that I took about this guy's shit.
In conclusion, it was a goddamned waste of time.
It was awful. And then after an hour, it just sort of ended.
Yes.
He didn't accomplish or prove anything. So what it means is that, one, I no longer have that illusion about what a panel is and who can run one.
Yes.
And two, you and I have to run a panel.
Oh, yes.
Because we could definitely do it way better than this asshole did.
Oh, yes.
I mean, even what we do right here on the Skulls cast is, like, a better panel than what that guy was doing. And, like, much more coherent and enjoyable, and the volume doesn't mysteriously cut out.
Well, that's true. You're pretty good at the post-production side of things.
Not really.
Usually I have, like, nothing much to say, but
I do the bare minimum of editing if I can get away with it.
So we're going to have a panel. It's going to be about sand in video games.
I think
games.
It's going to be about sand. I mean, we have a while to come up with a topic.
Yeah, we can think about it. Or we can just talk about how Asteroids is the greatest game ever and everything else is worse. And why?
Every game
is a worse
version
of
Asteroids. I am glad that we got to play a lot of Asteroids. And do you know why?
Why are you glad?
Because Asteroids was the first video game that I ever played.
Ooh.
Over 25 years ago. And so there was this mysterious nostalgic magic that happened when I set my hand on the buttons for Asteroids. I played it again. The same as I had played it before, 25 years ago. To have this flooding 25-year-old memory of these bright lights and sounds, and have the exact same ones with that vector display shine through in front of you. It's quite something. It's not a lot of, I don't know what else could match that. Certainly nothing for me currently could do that. I'll have to wait, another 20 or so years before I have a memory quite that evocative to call back to. So that was precious.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that they had those, like,
old
museum people.
Machines.
Yeah, apparently they had a restoration museum come and bring them all in. And they curate this shit.
Oh, yeah. No, it's real.
It's pretty cool.
History of video games.
Yeah, well, why not? I mean, Asteroids came out in 1979.
Oh, yeah. Vector display.
It's the future of gaming.
Oh, it looks like a future.
It looks like nothing else. That shit is amazing.
Because it is, like, just different visual hardware.
Yeah.
It is... It's sort of the magic here. You know, if you, listener, have never seen a vector display monitor in action, seek it out, because it is quite different from a raster display.
Go to your own local video games museum.
Yes.
And find Asteroids or Battle Tank or whatever.
Battle Zone. Something
Battle
like
Zone.
That. Tank Zone. Tank Battle, Zone Battle.
What other awesome games do we play? We played Joust.
We played Joust, which is a very silly game, but I like it a lot. For the same reasons that I like Ice Climber.
I didn't notice the fire troll for the
longest
time.
Oh, yeah, beware the fire troll.
What?
Can you beat the invincible pterodactyl? Once,
I mean, you
but
did
we don't know how.
Once. I don't know how that worked.
And then we would try it again.
Because
he's mad.
He was invincible.
Maybe just the first time each day you can beat him.
Ha.
And from then on, he's
mad. It recognizes that it's you.
Yeah, it can tell.
From psychrometric readings,
The
inputs. We also played Wizard of War.
We played Wizard of War, which is a very unusual sort of game, but I think it's quite good.
Well, it proves to me that even back then, games could be terrible.
You didn't like it?
Are you kidding?
I liked
it. It was like, oh, come on. It was like fake Pac-Man mixed with fake Space Invaders.
Well, it's like you got your two spacemen in the maze, and there were guys, and you can only sort of see them sometimes, but you have a radar, and you have to, like, work together, because, like, these monsters will ruin
you. Because otherwise you'll shoot each other.
Yeah, I definitely murdered
you, only have
like,
one
six
shot.
Times.
You murdered me quite a bit.
Yes.
The one thing that was going in Wizard of War's favor was the, like, spaceman talk.
Yes, the spaceman would talk. I have no idea what they said.
Yeah, it was really loud in there, so I couldn't tell what they were saying, but they had that distinctive, like, 1980s techno voice.
Mm.
And they had a buzzing voice. And I'm like, wait. What should I feel from that? And, you know, I just felt terror.
You should feel fear, yes.
I couldn't understand what was happening.
Neither do they. The spacemen don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, Wizard of War. Kind of a rubbish game. Still, I mean, it had different mistakes than the kind of mistakes that games have in them now.
That's good. I certainly hope
what
so.
What else did we discover? Yeah, otherwise, if it had, like, today's mistakes, there would be this, like, long dialogue in the beginning, and the graphics would be way too intense and make no sense, and, let's see. It would be too easy.
Constant button prompts.
Yeah. It would barely be a game, you'd just, like, it would prompt you to press the button, and you'd press it.
Yeah. What else? I mean, like, yeah, you know, we both spent a pretty decent amount of time, you know, with the various arcade machines, new and old. You know, I got my requisite bullet hell games in, reminding myself that I'm really pretty bad at these, but kind of okay. Like, I can beat, like, the first level, usually, just of some bullet hell games.
Did they have Twinkle Star sprites anywhere?
No,
in there?
They did not. Or I would
they
have
didn't.
Been on that shit.
I know, man. We should have done that. We should have, like, found it or something.
I don't but, even know, like, where would we even get a board for that?
Well, okay. There would be...
Wait,
no,
you've
no,
played
there's
Twinkle
like a,
Star Sprites?
Yeah, I have. What?
Because
it was
don't
on
you
the...
you hate
the,
it?
The Neo Geo, I think.
Yeah, it was a Neo Geo game, I'm pretty sure. I thought you hated that.
I don't hate it exactly. I think it's the... it's like the only bullet hell game that I can actually play because it's not...
Yeah, it's really not terribly as
it's,
many bullets.
It's quite a bit its own thing, and it's really enjoyable.
The versus vertical shooter. I like it a lot.
And the versus mode is really tight.
Yeah. It's kind of unbalanced. But Still really tight.
It's tight. And it has Nanja Manja.
Do not even fucking talk to me about Nanja Manja. I have had enough of those full fucking little whatever the hells just vomiting their
But there was no Twinkle Star Sprites.
All over
they
my
did have
screen.
A lot of consoles set up.
They did have a lot of consoles set up, but it was like a lot of people playing fight games, which is, you know, fine if you're into fight games. I actually didn't play any fight games. I bought my stick and didn't use it.
Did you roll out and smash with people?
I did play some Smash.
Okay.
I guess I usually don't think of that as a fight
game. So apparently there's this... I caught this while I was passing by. I didn't play Smash Brothers because I don't like it. But I was passing by and these four people were playing Smash Brothers. And there was like a giant Samus in the background. And I'm like, what the hell is that?
There's so many hacks for Brawl, it's not even funny.
Yeah. But apparently that was a that was not a background. That was the stage model.
Mm.
So they were running around on Samus's boobs.
Yikes.
And this is a stage?
I guess so.
I am mad at all gamers. We're just awful.
Definitely.
We're really terrible.
I got some good
people.
Smash in, though. I went with my normal strategy. You know, I find a station with, you know, four people at it, and they're playing, and they're all, like, kind of serious business about it. And I sort of stand there, and I'm like, yo, can I get in next? Yeah, okay. So the loser rotates out. I sit down. I pick random character. And then I just give the other three guys, because it's almost always guys, I just give them this stare that's like, join me in the pits of hell.
See, you're willing to do that, but you won't talk to strangers. This is weird to me.
That's because the world has been established as, you know, we're playing Smash, so now I'm in control.
Ah, okay.
Because I picked random, and I managed to coerce the other people into picking it, into also picking random, and then we have a bunch of really good matches where I, like, do the lamest shit imaginable and have a great time and just shout a lot while I'm playing, calling out all my attacks. And it's really great. That's how I choose to play and enjoy Smash Brothers well.
That's pretty good. I sat down and played Castlevania 3 for a time.
Yeah.
They moved it around a few times, and then for a while it wasn't even there, so I couldn't... I rediscovered a lot of interesting facts about it. Learned a little more about the Cyclops AI because I had always had my own way of handling that, but tried new things this time. And learned just how freakishly powerful Sypha can be. In particular, the lightning attack.
She is a wizard. She knows magic. Some of it is
I was
pretty
trapped
good.
I got into this this purgatory with the doppelganger. Because I said to myself, you know, this is going to be a Sypha-only run. Like, as soon as I get her, I'm not going to switch back at all. And I just gave myself that challenge and figured out what I would do about the game. And it wasn't until I got to the doppelganger that I approached an appreciable challenge. There are some challenging parts of the stages leading up to there, but it's all stuff that I had already known how to do and done. So it's not... There's nothing more that I needed to learn
Understood
in order to
challenges.
Succeed. Yeah, I just needed to perform at that point, not learn. Well, the doppelganger fight was something that I did need to learn about. And the fight went about like, if I had the lightning spell, then I could possibly win. And if I didn't, I couldn't. The doppelganger only ever uses Sypha's fire spell. If it can use the others, I just didn't see it in all the plenty of time that I played and fought against this thing. It got to the point where I had... You know how the lightning spell works, right?
Yeah, you get your orbs.
Yeah, you get three orbs, and they sort of home in on things, and then they go away. But you can only have one group of them on the screen at a time, and Sypha cannot get the double and triple shot like Grant and Trevor can. So, I was right next to the doppelganger. I had one hit left on me. If I got hit by anything, I would die. One of my lightning orbs decided to stick around and circle the doppelganger, not hitting it, just circling it.
A stable orbit.
Indeed, and I was attacking, trying to see if I could get like the orb to do something different. The doppelganger was also attacking, just so we were both like uselessly flailing at each other with our little sticks, and the orb was going around the doppelganger, and this went on for minutes. And I'm like, oh well, I guess I've lost, and then that was it. But I got into this like stable logic loop with the doppelganger.
Two wizards.
AI. Yeah.
One real, one fake.
I really have to. I could probably like get a lot better at that game if I just sat down and tried. Mm. Well, the challenge stations were really fun.
Ah, yes. Too. I only did a very small number of the relatively easy ones.
Yeah, I mean, I took a crack at the like normal difficulty ones enough to satisfy myself that they like aren't really worth the effort. Well, I mean, in a sense of I'm doing this to see if I can do a challenge kind of effort,
yeah.
But they are worthwhile in the sense of there were like actual rewards for completing a certain number of challenges.
Fabulous
prizes. Kind of effort, and so that would be pretty good. Yeah, the normal ones were all pretty easy. They had like, I mean, many of them were games I hadn't played, but
yeah,
I could
like
still
a bunch of them. Like I would boot up the game, be like, "How does this work?" And I just wouldn't be able to figure out how to like perform enough basic function in the game to be able to beat it. Or it would become really obvious. It's like, okay, I can do this, but it's going to take 8 minutes of like perfect play or whatever. And I'm like, nope.
Well, no, my experience with the normal difficulty ones was that even if I hadn't played the game, I could sit there and figure out how to beat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did. And I'm like, wow. That really shouldn't be possible for this to be like any kind of worthy challenge at all. I'm not talented enough a gamer for that to be realistic. However, it did open my eyes to the existence of an NES game called Shatterhand.
Ah, yeah, Shatterhand.
Which I think I have to go play now.
It's pretty popular for speedruns that I've seen.
You're a dude and you punch things.
Yes.
I love it.
And you get powers.
Now, my favorite accomplishment of the entire challenge station thing.
Tell them about it, Cass.
They had one for Kirby Superstar.
Yeah.
They had it set up for you to do the full arena. You don't start with any powers. You start in the first fight, and the block buttons and the helper button are disabled. You don't have them.
You,
no helpers.
You can't press those buttons.
No starting powers. No block. Now, I've often given myself a similar challenge. I've done, like, no block, no helper runs of the arena before. Indeed, famously, I did one with Suplex.
Yeah.
So I decided to do that again.
Yeah.
And fortunately for me, they had a save state set for you starting the fight with mini bosses 1.
Yeah.
Which ends with Bugsy. So I could always, like, finish that fight, get Bugsy, and Suplex everything else.
Yes.
And I fucking did it.
Yes.
It took me a while, and it was hard.
It's not easy. I instead took the coward's path. Because after, you know, I played it for a while, you know, thinking, okay, you know, get powers that deal a lot of damage. Get plasma, get bomb. Thinking that I'll just, you know, the best defense is a good offense if
yeah.
I can't block. And then, at one of the little, you know, between fight power selection things, a thought occurred to me. I just thought, huh. I could take stone power.
Yeah, in between fights, they give you the option to, like, pick up.
Yes, and they're random, more or less. And I thought, huh, I wonder if, you know, at first I was just wondering, you know, I wonder if Wham Bam Rock can still grab you with his grab move if you're a stone. Well, I guess I'd better pick up stone now while it's here and find out. And I proceeded to coast is not the right word, but move slow, steady stone power pace through the rest of the challenges, because it turns out that when you can't block, a button that turns you invincible is really powerful.
Yeah. There are a couple of places where the suplex run gets really hairy.
Yes.
One of them is Meta Knight.
Meta Knight is small and fast, and he wants you.
He's random as hell, and he has a lot of moves, and sometimes you can't actually get out of his way, and he's a big pain in the ass. Mm. And so there was always that moment in the run where I'm like, okay, time for Meta Knight, and I pick up a tomato, go fight Meta Knight. If I win, I then leave and pick up another tomato, because good God.
Yeah.
I am destroyed.
Meta Knight historically is usually pretty challenging. That's how Meta Knight works.
The next most challenging boss was, with Suplex anyway, was
the Dyna
Computer
Blade?
Virus.
Computer. Oh yeah, Computer
no,
Virus.
Dyna Blade got a lot easier when I figured her out.
Okay.
And I could get like, because there are some setups of Dyna Blade where you can get something like 4 hits with your Suplex slams in before Dyna does anything that gets out of your way. So usually with Dyna Blade, she swoops into the screen and then comes down, and that leaves a star. You suplex that star up press, which hits twice. You get out of the way of her pellets. She goes up and then swoops down left to right or right to left, whichever. You can get 1 or 2 pin kicks in pretty safely at that time, and then be at the ground to grab another star to finish her off, and it's just...
With Stone, she gave me a
hell
of a time.
So Dyna Blade isn't... Yeah. Stone would be pretty tough. But, you know, Dyna Blade wasn't all that bad. Computer Virus was, though, because it's like, okay, you can pin kick me a couple times now. I will use my murder beam. And
yeah.
So I was... at some points, I was at the mercy of what the AI picked with Red Dragon.
Yeah. I mean, from what I've seen of the... The run where someone did, like, no power, no helper, no tomato. It was, like, the only damage they took was on Computer Virus. Because also no blocking, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, I, having taken the cheater's way out, have a relatively easy time of things with Computer Virus. Because it's like, the enemy is about to attack. So I'm like, okay, I am a rock.
Yeah. All right, so that was the challenge station. And if you want to see a similar run to my run, I've put it on my Twitch page.
Oh, yeah.
So I did record the stream where I sat down and did that after I got back. And I did ultimately have a successful run again there at on the Twitch.
Nice.
I was really happy about that.
You know what was neat? That was right next to the challenge stations.
The indie station!
The indie game stations! There were a bunch of different indie devs there showing off what they got. It was pretty radical.
I really like that they were there. We had a good conversation with the guy who made Wiggity Wings.
Yes. Well, he's still working on it, but...
Alright, well...
Yeah, he was like, Sean? I feel bad, I can't give him a proper shout-out. I'll have to look up.
Well, I imagine that just the name Wiggity Wings...
Yeah, Wiggity Wings is going to be enough to identify this guy.
That's a better way to identify this guy than
but,
anything.
Like, real good talk with him, talked shop with him for a while, talked...
He's got a really positive attitude, he's good with music.
Yeah. And his game was pretty much fine.
It was very unique.
It was unique?
Which speaks for a lot more than goodness, I think.
That's true.
It was a strictly better version of that shitty thing in the Pokemon Dream World, where you're flying around.
It's the helicopter cave game, whatever.
Yeah.
It was that with like cool stuff happening and other stuff and pretty unique graphical ideas.
Yeah, you collect wigs to power up your flight. And you're trying to avoid scissors because those will clip your hair.
Yes. You have no hair of your own.
Yes.
You are bald.
That was that. Next to that guy for pretty much the entire time was Barabariball.
Yeah, Barabariball.
And I didn't play it because it looked like Smash Brothers and I didn't want to play
it. It's kind of like Smash Brothers, but also not.
It's got an excellent graphical style, Its sound effects are great. I would hear that little chime noise going behind me, and I'm like, oh, someone scored in Barabari Ball. And I would just... It's very unique.
Mm. I didn't play it.
It's definitely his own thing.
It was pretty alright. I feel like not enough about it is really made clear and obvious. Also, I think the controllers were a little wacky because I couldn't always dash when I wanted to. But also, I think I'd like it much more as a 2v2 rather than a 1v1 experience. Which, you know, is in the game, but their setup was only for 1v1.
There was another wing of that little area where a dude who developed for the NES...
Yeah, straight up. NES homebrew.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
Which is crazy.
And I had written out an entire, like, response note critiquing his game, but I couldn't find him afterwards, so... Mm-hmm. I have, like, a Facebook link that's on his business card or whatever, so I'll just, like...
Yeah, throw it there.
Post something
You're
to
like,
that.
Hi, I played a game at Magfus.
Like, yeah, I am some random dude who has... who's hyper-opinionated about video games, and this is what I think of your game. And it's about half good and bad.
Mm.
All of the mistakes that I saw were, like, design-level mistakes. There were zero implementation-level mistakes in this thing. The controls were very tight. The enemy AI was brilliant. This is, I'm given to understand, hard to do on the NES. And, yeah, it was, I was just impressed that anyone would do this, like, homebrew NES. And I asked him if there was any problem that he ran into, like, getting a license for it or whatever, and he says basically there's not. Like, Nintendo doesn't care. You can just do whatever. So brilliant.
Pretty much public domain at this point.
Yeah, if you want to make NES homebrew games, that is a thing. He also said that I had a rather long conversation with this guy, you understand, because he was willing to talk, and a person who could talk about a topic with intelligence and aplomb, which is very rare in that place. I don't think I could have gotten such a good conversation out of, like, any random Grognard who's just, like, sitting around playing Smash, for instance. But then again, I didn't try, and, you know, catch as catch can. But what he said was that he had started trying to develop on, like, XNA and I think in Python even, and some other languages, and he said that he felt like he had too many options, and he experienced what he called option paralysis, is where there's just too much shit available to choose from, and because of that, you don't know which one you want.
Yeah.
And I was... That idea really resonated with me, and I think we'll have a longer discussion about option paralysis at some time. He found his way out of it by limiting himself to the damn NES and what that's available to do, and I'm like, well, you know, it worked for you. He made a game called Nolimos, which is Solomon spelled backwards, because he and his wife have a cat called Solomon. And this is an adventure story about that cat.
With a sword.
Yeah, it's pretty silly, but it's also, again, really unique.
It's a very real game.
Very personal, and I think that's
game
more important than
anything. Made by humans.
Yeah, totally real. Man... What else
played Magic
at Magfest? We did play Magic. We got to play Magic with Sly09.
Yeah, shoutouts to Sly09.
That was awesome.
It was rad.
We played Sly09's cube, using a variant rule that Medibot conjured up or discovered or whatever, called the Cube of Commitment, where instead of drafting and building a deck from what you've drafted, you draft and just keep all the cards in your deck.
Yes.
And you have to use every card that you drafted.
All 45 cards you draft must be in your main deck.
We all employed different strategies to different success rates.
Yeah.
And it was a really fun
Red
time.
Was super open. Which is a mixed blessing when you have to play every card.
Well, I think that we could well tailor a cube to work with that, but it was a really fun time.
It was
really
great.
Glad that I got to
we also drafted once.
Play with Slayo.
And I
we did.
I went 1-2, but I'm also a jerk.
Who you opened your entry fee.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, a foil overgrown tomb. I have no guess.
Okay. Yeah. It's pretty good. I went 2-1. My third match was really a heartbreaker. I basically did everything correct that I possibly could. And
it was against like red aggro guy.
At the end of the game, at the end of the match, he needed to have one specific card, and I needed to not have any of 5 specific cards. And both of those events transpired, and I lost. So I'm like, damn. It was so, like, don't have the explosive impact. Don't have the explosive impact. And then, I died to explosive impact. And that was the end of everything.
I basically played like an idiot that night, but whatever.
I need to teach you how to double block.
Yeah, also that. I don't, like, I've overtaught myself to not double block, and I need to relearn how to double block in less obvious double blocking scenarios. You know, blocking the 3-3 with 2-2-2s is the obvious double block, but sometimes blocking the 4-4 with 2-2-2s is correct, and I need to learn that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely in the situation that I saw you in, you could have
yeah, right
saved yourself
there, I should
a lot
have
of
just
grief.
Try to get his goddamn Jailbreakers off the board. Where was my removal? I drafted, like, my pack one, I picked, like, one creature and 6 removal spells.
I mean, I myself was rocking double Annihilating Fire, I think.
Yeah, like, I had, like, double Explosive Impact, double Stab Wound.
Oh, savage.
Yeah, pack one, pick one, stab wound. I'm like, yeah, this is defensible. I don't care. Stab wound. Of course, awesome. And then of course all my opponents have like a main deck enchantment removal or whatever to make me feel like an idiot. Or like I get blown out by a launch party the next turn.
Well, launch party is also a very good card.
Yeah, I had one of those.
It was a good draft.
It was good.
I liked that that they were running drafts and that we could just have continuous pods of people doing draft.
They were pretty well done.
It was the appropriate like scale of Magic players.
Yeah. Like,
it wasn't enough of them in a tight enough space that they began to stink up the place. And hey, that goes for all of MagFest this year.
Huh?
Not too stinky.
No, it's usually.
Yeah, it was alright.
Reasonably okay. The most of the areas you're in are pretty open.
That's true.
And that helps a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, not a lot of stinky people, which I was pleasantly surprised to learn. They kept the hotel really dry. Like, I felt like
thirsty.
I wanted water just from walking around, and the air all in that place was just super dry. Maybe that's a hygienic thing. Maybe that saves on their maintenance costs because water ruins everything.
Water does have the power to affect anything it touches. I'm trying to think. What else happened at MagFest?
Okay, well, we talked about the panel.
I went to some music
stuff.
Talk
about Magic. Well, we both went to that rave?
Yeah, rave really, it was, I wouldn't call it a rave, but it was a DJ set from Yuzo Koshiro.
Yeah.
And it started off a little weak, and then it got better.
I disagree. I think it started off and stayed weak for the entire thing, and especially halfway through when they began to blind the audience.
Okay, like the
stage lighting.
The stage lighting was suboptimal.
That was vile.
That was I guess I'm mostly referring to like just the noises that were coming out of the speakers. I liked
even
it.
Even that wasn't good. That was good stuff to like have in your iPod or whatever, just like walking around music. But that was not rave music. That was not.
I don't know why people are thinking like, who said rave first?
Well, I don't know.
Because it didn't say rave on the schedule. I never thought it was going to be a rave.
Someone said rave to me, and I'm like, okay, sure. And, you know, it's dark. There are people with, like, rave tchotchkes and little lights and things.
That was, like, 3 people. They do that at all the shows.
Oh, it was the guy dressed like Skrillex.
It's because he's trolling.
Okay, fine. What else? Whatever. Point is, the guy is
Jake
not
Kaufman, and he's a super cool guy.
The guy is a composer, and he's good at that, and he's not a DJ, and they probably shouldn't have had him on there. The whole thing did give me one like surreal experience that I'm going to carry with me for the rest of my life, I think.
Yeah.
And that's the very opening where, you know, the lights are going, and he's setting up, and there's no sound, and then he starts up his little scratch table or whatever, and it kicks in with the town theme from ActRaiser.
Yeah.
Like, just the MIDI beeps and boops, and he's, like, rocking to it as if it's some kind of,
yeah,
like, dope-ass beat. And I'm like, what? There's this huge cognitive dissonance between, like, what appears to be happening and what is actually happening that... It was very unique. So yeah, that was the surreal experience. It was like,
I haven't even fucking played ActRaiser.
What?
No, I haven't played like any video game.
Why the hell do you care about this guy then? If you hadn't played ActRaiser.
Oh, because I was going with Alex. Like, I haven't played, like, I think I've played, like, one game that this guy composed for, and I didn't like the game.
Fascinating.
But he seemed like a cool guy, so I'm like, yeah, I'll go to his DJ set.
So, yeah, that's the M of MAGFest,
yeah,
I believe.
Music. Yeah, and like I said before, I went to, like, a sort of a smaller composer panel. And then I talked with Jake Kaufman for a little bit after, who did the soundtrack for Adventure Time 3DS, Hey Ice King, Why'd You Steal Our Garbage, which is a quality game with a, in my opinion, extremely good soundtrack. And I got him to sign my special metal case for the special edition of the game, and it was cool.
Oh, man. You and I have not casted about that yet, have we?
We haven't.
Well, that's the next thing. I think we're pretty much wrapped up with MAGFest.
It was fun, and I'm going to do it again.
It was very fun. I would do it again, but only for one day. Not the, like...
I want it for a week.
...multitude of days.
I want it melt.
No.
I only want to be bones.
I want to cram all of it into one day.
I want all of it crammed into my skull.
Skulls.